Hey everyone, Chris Manning from Lockdown Cavs here. Coming up on today's show, Jeff Siegel from Early Bird Rights joined Evan and I to talk about the Cavs. If later this week, Evan and I are going to be doing a special Oscars-y themed episode, do you have any category ideas? Drop those to lockdowncavs@gmail.com. They may not make it into this round of it, but this is something if it goes well, if we could get feedback on it, and we may do it again at the end of the season. So again, if you have any category ideas that could be like a Cavs Oscars, drop those to lockdowncavs@gmail.com. Coming up, Jeff Siegel. That's coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Hey there, Chris Manning here on Locked On Cavs, the Cavaliers podcast where we do, in fact, watch the games. My co-host is with me, Evan Damrell. Evan, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, not too much. That tweet definitely raised an eyebrow today, and I'm like, I gotta put out this fire ASAP. So, we do watch the games, I promise, yeah, folks.
Thanks for the engagement, though. I appreciate it. But joining us today is one of the most regularly occurring guests here on Locked On Cavs, one of my favorite people to talk basketball to. It's Jeff Siegel. You can primarily find everything he does over at Early Bird Rights, where you can find cap sheets, rotation breakdowns, future free agent stuff, a whole bunch of great stuff over there. Jeff, how are you? And how are you doing post deadline, where I know you were frantically just updating things at a frantic rate?
Yeah, it was a little rough for a few days there, from about February 4th-ish all the way through. I finished all my writing on the 8th, finally, to get everything up. Not having a staff at Early Bird Rights, just being a one-man show, means I can't just be like, yeah, go write about this thing. I have to actually sit down and do it. So, it took me a couple days after the deadline to get all my thoughts out there, and then I spent yesterday relaxing, and now, this, as we record this on Monday night, I've, getting back into the groove of actually watching the games, which is something I didn't have a whole lot of time to do last week.
So what we're going to do today is dive in more into the Andre Drummond trade. Again, he made his debut on Sunday against the Clippers in a game that did not go very well. And then Evan talked to Duncan Smith from Forbes about Andre Drummond. Obviously, Duncan writes about the Pistons. So if you want to go listen to about his debut and get Duncan's insight on Andre Drummond, please go listen to that episode. It's right behind this one in the feeds. But Jeff, I want to start with your evaluation of this trade again, in case you're just catching up for whatever reason, or just to rehash it. John Henson, Brandon Knight, two expiring contracts plus a future second round pick get the Cavs Andre Drummond. What did you make of the deal?
I mean, it was a very, very low price for a team to pay for somebody who makes as much money as Drummond makes. But I think that's sort of the encapsulation of his value around the league. Detroit was looking for a first round pick from a team like Atlanta, from a handful of other teams, and nobody was willing to come to the table with that kind of pick. And it turns out that that the best that they could do was this sort of the low end of swap rights of a second round pick in four drafts from now. It's from their perspective, you have to be sort of disappointed that this is all that they got. And from Cleveland's perspective, this is basically like signing him in free agency to the contract that he's on right now, because you almost paid nothing for him.
I think Evan and I fell on that as well. I couldn't. I know some people like gave it F's, and Evan chime in here, but I didn't really get I get why people feel like this could be read as like an aimless move by the Cavs, but to me, it's just like the value of it and the lack of harm I think it really can't do for them, just on its own. Like, what could come next theoretically could be harmful, but when you just look at it in terms of what it is for what they gave up, I just don't see how this is an F or anything that's just I get that it's weird, but I don't think it's a absolute disaster for the Cavs. It's more of a disaster for me for the Pistons.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. Sorry. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah. I mean, I think I agree with you as well. I think that the Pistons sort of sold as low as they possibly could on him. And the only way that this goes bad for Cleveland for me is that, if they've already decided if he opts out, we're going to max him out, or we're going to give him $80 million, or we're going to, you know, give him $100 million. Like, if there's a plan already in place for them to give him a four-year contract this summer, like, that's where I would get a little queasy with this. But I think if they're just saying, we'll take you for the rest of the season, if you opt out and want a bunch of money, then, you know, we were happy to have you for free, basically, and you can walk. Or if you opt in, we're happy to have you, and we'll figure it out next year. You know, I think that's the path that I would hope that they're taking. But if they're already planning, like, we're going to give this guy $25-30 million a year, then now I'm not as on board with this trade.
I guess my question for you, Jeff, is if he does opt in and the Cavs get a better gauge of what they have with a larger sample size, what do you think would be a realistic, maybe fair, if you want to say, contract offer that Cleveland could offer Drummond next summer, not this upcoming offseason, but the following offseason, just to say, like, we'd like to keep you in our core and foundation long term?
I mean, at that point, they'll have a much better idea of how he fits with their guards. They'll have another draft pick to integrate in. They'll have more time with Kevin Porter, hopefully Dylan Windler next year as well. So they'll have more time to sort of see how he fits among the young guys. Well, you know, they'll obviously be one step closer to, you know, getting out of Kevin Love's deal one way or another, getting out of, you know, not that they need to get out of Larry Nance's deal, but, like, you know, he sort of conflicts with Drummond in a way. But, you know, if they wait another year till 2021, there's only 2 years left on Nance. You know, he can be that backup center at the price that he's being paid at that point. So at that point, if they're still happy with him and they want to give him, you know, 4 for $80, 4 for $100 even, I think that would make more sense next summer, because they'll have a year and basically a year and a half to sort of see how he fits with the new team. The fact that the Love and Nance contracts will be another year closer to being expired, that will help them as well. They'll sort of, just everything, they'll know a whole lot more. It's going to be a lot more difficult for them to know how he fits with the rest of the team this summer, but by next summer they should know that.
I think that is the big kind of unanswerable question. Like, I know there's been some indications from his camp that, like, he's going to opt in, I think, is the kind of the read right now. Evan, I'm right about that, right? Okay. So my thing with him is, if I was him, I would take the $28 million, I think. Like, opt in. I think the biggest downside would be, if you're looking at 2021 and you're looking at what is everyone expects to be kind of a much more robust free agency class than next summer, if he would not be someone I think that is going to get, like, a lot of money, you know? Like, it's not like he's going to go in that summer and I think be someone teams are going to prize. If you just look at, like, guys like Giannis or guys even a little below that, like, he's probably, in just the way the league's going, it's not like I think he's going to be someone that I would guess is going to get a lot of money. I wonder if, and I just will say this, like, I wonder if the Cavs are going to do something with Drummond. Like, if you just look at their sheet, Garland is pretty cheap for the next several years. Sexton's still pretty cheap for the next several years. Jetty's on that de-escalating contract. Nance's contract is also de-escalating, like, his peaks this year, and it goes down over the next several years. You know, Kevin Porter Jr. is on an absolute bargain of a contract. Dylan Windler is pretty cheap as well. They don't really have, aside from Kevin Love, which is, like, a whole kind of complication in this and something I don't quite know how to make up. They don't have anything that would make me, like, there's a pure max for Drummond would be, I think, a clear overpay. But when I think about, like, if it's like $90 million or something like that, like, I think if you feel like he's going to help your young guys and just help you be competent in a way that you haven't been, I think that's fine. Like, I really can just kind of justify that in a way. It again, like, I don't think the Cavs are shooting to, like, win a title with Andre Drummond or, like, have maybe as high as aspirations as, like, Atlanta does. I think they're just trying to, like, do something that is not, like, the absolute worst team in the league and have a non-rudderless existence. And I think Drummond, there is a way that Drummond can help you get to that.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that in a sense. And I guess, Jeff, do you think it's more of a blessing in disguise for Cleveland going into this summer that, let's say, Drummond does take his player option, like all reports are indicating, to just kind of pull them out of this free agency class? Because it's no secret at this point that this year's free agency class isn't very good, and I think Cleveland kind of removing themselves from the game is a good thing. Don't you think so?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a few teams do that. We saw Atlanta pre-spend basically like $20 million in their cap space on Dwayne Dedman and Clint Capella. We saw Memphis basically nuke their entire cap space. They were going to have $50 million, and now they're going to have nothing. In the deals that they made, both the extension for Dylan Brooks and the trades for Justice Winslow, Deion Waiters, who they cut, and then Gorgui Dieng. So teams are looking to do that. The Cavaliers wanted to do that with this deal. This was basically them pre-spending all of their free agent money. And they're hoping that they're hoping that Drummond does opt in, and then they can figure it out in the next summer. If he doesn't, then they're going to have to sort of figure out what his price point is. For him, it's about, where else would he get that money? If he opts out and Cleveland is like, all right, well, it was a fine end of the season, but we're not willing to pay you right now based on what we know, where does that money come from for him? I think Charlotte is the only team out there that would make a ton of sense. And even them, I wouldn't necessarily advocate for them to give him, 4 for $90 or 4 for $80 even. There's pretty much nobody should do that just based on, the value of the center position and what Drummond brings to the table. But for Cleveland, like Chris said, I think having a non-rudderless existence in the league, having a pick and roll big man to pair with a pick and pop big man and Kevin Love, like you can do some stuff with that makes sense, that helps the guards develop. We often talk about that with other positions where having a competent level of point guard play can help you really evaluate your young big man, your young wings. This is almost sort of the reverse of that, where you would have a competent center, a competent defensive center who can catch lobs, who can rebound, who can just sort of provide a baseline value of defense and offense that will allow you to, really understand what Garland's, value is long term, what Sexton's value is long term. So that way they have some sort of idea of, where these guys are valued, whether they need to move in a different direction at the guard spots and just sort of figure out where the next good Cleveland Cavaliers team comes from.
Yeah, that all sounds right. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and then come back with more of the Jeff Siegel from Early Bird Rent. So stay tuned. Hey, Chris here. If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Cavs is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Cavs fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. And not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Cavs fans in a predominantly male audience that is well-educated, with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. So text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you. All right, we are back with Jeff Siegel from Early Bird Rights. Jeff, I want to ask you this. What do you think, if you're looking at the Cavs and you're looking at, let's say Andre Drummond opts in for next year and you're trying to build the most competent roster possible. I think the Kevin Love trade stuff is not going to go away. It would not surprise me if they moved off of him next summer, maybe at a lower price point than they were looking for at the deadline. What to you, if you're looking at just doing something to kind of, let's say the core of your roster is whatever pick you get, Sexton, Garland, Osman, Nance, KPJ, Drummond, that's kind of your core. What do you think if you're looking to just take a step forward in some way? Do you have kind of positions or skill sets that you would say are the kind of the most applicable to what the Cavs might be trying to do?
I think the two big ones that stand out in that scenario would be something that a guy who replaces Love at like a third of the cost, hopefully somebody who can stretch the floor at the four position, because if Nance is part of that core, is he starting next to Andre Drummond or is he sort of the backup center? I would think he'd be more of a backup center type. He's still in that core just, because of the length of his contract really. And because he can provide value as a backup center, I think that stretch four option would be smart next to Drummond. Drummond can sort of protect the rim. He can rebound. You don't necessarily need that guy to be a high-level rebounder. But if they had the money to, I mean, they're not going to splash the cash on like Danilo Gallinari. I don't think they're going to have the money for that. But a guy who sort of fits that mold, I think that makes a lot of sense. And then the other position that I would look at is on the wing. Osman defensively, like, just maybe doesn't quite hold up as, even at the three. You know, I think that that's a position of need where they could, you know, get a perimeter defender in there next to Garland and Sexton who can, you know, defend one through three, you know, preferably, and really try to bolster the perimeter defense.
Evan, is there someone or a position type or anything that you would say like that is what you would like to see the Cavs try and do?
I agree with Jeff's assessment. It's just you have to see kind of what the market is for Kevin Love going into the summer. And I like his just thought process that you find a stretchier four that works at about maybe the third of the cost, because I agree, Larry Nance is better suited as a high energy big off the bench for Cleveland.
He'd be a really good fit, by the way, with Sexton. If Sexton goes to the bench next year, Nance is like I think Nance and Osman are like kind of perfect fits for him in that unit.
Yeah, no, all three of them are just like guys who would just provide a nice punch off the bench for Cleveland, and I think it would also help with the development of KPJ and Garland and even Windler, who will be playing for his rookie season. But I guess it's just kind of get to see what you have and what you have going forward, because Ante Zizek will probably not be here next year. Matthew Dellavedova may be here next year just because he's kind of a John Boeheim favorite and he's a fan favorite as well, so it kind of keeps the casual fan engaged. You have to keep that in consideration. Alphonso McKinney will likely be here as well, and he'll be a nice complimentary piece and will help round off that bench rotation for Cleveland. But I guess my question for you, Jeff, is the Cavs are unable to move Tristan Thompson at the deadline, and from all reports, it doesn't seem like he's getting a buyout, and he would like to stay with Cleveland through the remainder of the season. And I've kind of heard rumblings and just whispers that Cleveland is looking to execute a sign-and-trade with him this summer. Do you think that's actually possible for someone of Thompson's skill set and age, or do you think that's just kind of wishful thinking on Cleveland's behalf?
I mean, it seems like wishful thinking to me, only because so many teams are going to have the $10 million mid-level exception, and like, is Tristan really going to get more than $10 million? Because that's where Cleveland would need to facilitate some sort of sign and trade in that situation, just because the team that he's going to will not have a $15 million exception, because there is no $15 million exception to pick him up. So I think that's if the guys who I'm looking at for sign and trade opportunities are the guys who are clearly better than the mid-level exception, like Danilo Gallinari, who is clearly, you know, going to make a ton of money this summer, mm-hmm. I would imagine. Davis Bertans, if he's going to leave Washington, he's another sort of stretch four option that would obviously be great in Cleveland. He'd be great everywhere. That's, you know, the Davis Bertans experience. But if he's going to make $18 million, there's not a whole lot of money out there for those guys. And so those are the guys that are going to try to facilitate sign and trades if they're going to leave their current teams. Thompson, I mean, if Cleveland wants to try to work a sign and trade, I'm sure that would certainly benefit them. But is he going to get more than that, you know, about $10 million mid-level exception from a team?
The guy that I was looking at the list, Jeff has a great kind of database of guys that'll be free agents and sorts of my positions. The guys that I think would be interesting, if you're going to go veteran-wise, I think someone like Nemanja Bjelica could be interesting. I think he's non-guaranteed for next year, so it would depend on him kind of getting out of that, but that would be an option. I think Trey Lyles, who's a bit younger but would fall under the same kind of bit. Dario Saric, I don't quite know what's up with him in Phoenix, but he could be someone that makes some sense. And the one that I'd like the most, because I really liked him in international play, but I think it seems like him in Minnesota means it's a little bit different now. But Juancho Hernan Gomez would have been someone I really could get behind as an idea, as kind of a guy that could be that four you go and take, you roll a dice on, see what you can get. Jeff, is there a name? Do you like any of those options, or is there someone out there that else you would like in terms of being like a Love light replacement, assuming they do move him, which like I think we expect to happen, but I don't think it's like a lock by any means.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily a lock. He can stick around next year, especially, you know, the offensive fit next to Drummond makes a little bit of sense. The defensive fit even a little bit, because of Drummond's just sort of baseline level of rim protection and defensive rebounding. You can, you know, put Love a little bit further out on the floor and not have him, you know, need to defensive rebound as much. And so that, you know, I think that partnership can make sense. You know, Juancho, in Minnesota makes a lot of sense for them. He's playing a ton now for the Wolves in just these last couple of games since the deadline. You know, I think he started tonight for the Timberwolves as we record this. So I think he seems like an important part of their future. He and Malik Beasley, they basically paid a first round pick to get those guys. Beasley, you know, played really well in his debut, was playing pretty well in the first half from what I saw tonight. And so I think Hernan Gomez seems like a bigger part of the Wolves' plans going forward. But, you know, if they come to an impasse and he's a restricted free agent, you know, Cleveland, you know, they don't have to, they're not big, you know, they're not fishing for the best players in the league this summer. They could tie up their cap space for a couple of days and try to sign him to a, you know, $8 million, $10 million a year contract and just make sure that Minnesota has to pay that guy market price. You know, I think that makes a lot of sense. Dario Saric is another name that you mentioned there, and he may not even get that restricted offer just based on whether Phoenix wants to use their cap space or not. So I think that that is a name that makes a lot of sense. You know, there are other names further down the line. You know, Mike Muscala can play the four and the five. He's, you know, not good, but like he might be somewhat interesting. You know, the issue with Bielitsa in Cleveland or in Sacramento for Cleveland to get him would be that the trade that they made to move off of Deadman's salary and just bring back Jabari Parker for next year saved them about $7 million. And that's exactly what they're going to need for Bielitsa next summer. You know, all the reporting was that like now they can pay Bogdan Bogdanović whatever he needs, which is true. But that, I think that already factored in the fact that they were going to keep Bielitsa. That's just sort of the read on it from my perspective. So, you know, I'm not sure that he's going to be available, but there are some other guys on the market this summer who will be available.
Last thing, are there any other kind of like wingy types that you would say it's going to be a need for the Cavs? I'd expect they're going to draft a wing, but is there anyone like a Joe Harris type or anyone like that that you might consider just using whatever money they have and just seeing if they could get someone like that? Does anyone jump out from you in that perspective?
Yeah, I mean, Joe Harris is probably out of their price range if they're not going to have cap space. It seems, I mean, he's making $8 million this year. He may or may not go back to Brooklyn. Brooklyn's already got tax issues before they re-sign him. So, you know, we're not sure like how much money they're really willing to spend. We've never seen this particular ownership group go really deep into the tax. So, you know, we'll see what they're willing to spend on him. If he hits free agency and he's up for the mid-level exception, is he really going to choose Cleveland over a team where he could, you know, win? That's, you know, we'll see. But if they, you know, if they want to try to figure out some sort of sign and trade there, they, you know, they might be able to pay him a little bit more. You know, there are some other guys around the league, older guys who might fit on the wing as sort of a defensive presence. Maurice Harkless, Andre Robertson, if he's even a little bit healthy, but it seems like he might never be healthy again. So, you know, that's kind of an unfortunate thing for him. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, if he opts out and the Lakers don't want to re-sign him, that's, you know, that would be a target. Jay Crowder as well, even though his, you know, his time in Cleveland, you know, maybe it would turn him off from signing there. There are some guys out there. If they wanted to take a flyer on Josh Jackson just to see if he can do anything, like that would be, you know, that I wouldn't hate that. Like there's, you know, the baseline level of what they could use on the wing is not very high. So there are a lot of guys who can sort of fill that role.
All right, we're going to take one last break, and then we're going to be back with just a quick little bit on where the Cavs also could go from here with Jeff Siegel from Early Bird Rich. So stay tuned for that. All right, last segment here today on Locked on Cavs with Jeff Siegel. Again, find him on Twitter at JGSiegel. Jeff, Evan, I want to hear this from both of you. We have 30-ish games or whatever it is left for the Cavs to
put me out of my
They're going to be bad. They're going to remain very bad. They're going to have a high draft pick. I think Jeff in his capture right now, like they're the worst team in the league right now. That's not a great draft to be number one, but like, hey, number one pick is number one pick. We'll start with Jeff, then go to Evan. What are just things you would want to see from this team the rest of the season to say that they're at least they're after two really bad years post LeBron, that they are at least trending in somewhat of a positive direction?
I mean, for me, I think it starts on the defensive end, and that's where Drummond hopefully will give them a big boost. Is, you know, in the defensive metrics, they're already a decent, you know, rebounding team, but they give up a ton of shots at the rim. And if they can quell that just by the fact that he's going to be back there and he's going to be massive back there. I think that's going to help their defense a lot, and sort of how that, you know, sort of ripples out to the rest of the team, especially the guards in pick and roll and stuff like that. That's going to be, you know, I think one of the bigger things to watch with them is, you know, they give up so many shots at the rim. If he's back there and he can deter, you know, drivers from even taking those shots, that's going to say a lot about their defensive improvement the rest of the year.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that as well. And I think John Beilein kind of alluded to that after they traded for Andre Drummond, that when you look at Darius Garland, Cal, and Sexton, Jetty Osmond, they get kind of blown past, they get blown by individually on the perimeter. And
oh, he does not like being asked about it.
No, he doesn't. He won't specifically name names, but he'll say if there's a mistake, there's a mistake. But I think Drummond will provide a bit of that anchor in terms of rim protection. And like Jeff alluded to, the Cavs are already a good rebounding team just in terms of Thompson and Love. If you throw Drummond into that mix as well, the Cavs are probably an elite rebounding team. It's just weird to kind of put the word elite with this team. But I'm also kind of firmly in the camp after my talk with Duncan Smith and just the way Detroit fans are kind of who I've talked to who covers the team more closely, that Drummond's kind of a player where maybe he bumps Cleveland back a few. Like right now, they have the second worst record in the league. Golden State is the worst, and Detroit is currently seventh. I think maybe by the end of the season, these last 29-30 games, Drummond may bump them down from second to maybe like third, fourth, fifth, something in that bracket area. And that still is not going to have a serious implication on this draft, because the way this draft class is shaking up, you can grab a wing player if you want. If Drummond doesn't work, Onyeka Okongwu, who I'm quickly selling myself on as a viable option for Cleveland in the draft, is there as well. And, you know, I think you just kind of figure out what you have going forward with this and just kind of build like a nice model consistency, a certain level of comfort. Like, I know people were overreacting last night with the Cavs suffering the worst home loss in franchise history, and I mean, Andre Drummond's debut was nothing to really write home about. He also fired off 2 3-pointers and connected on them, and apparently Beilein doesn't want that to be a feature of their offense going forward, so whatever. But I think it's just like the Cavs need to find a little bit of that like direction that we alluded to, or Chris more so alluded to earlier on, that maybe getting Drummond does that, and it's not going to have a serious implication on the rebuild, but at least it's going to give them stability, which is something they haven't had maybe since the Cavs won the championship in 2016, and even then that was a tumultuous season.
Jeff, how do you compare this to something like what Atlanta is doing?
I mean, that's kind of a difficult comparison, because Atlanta already has the sort of all-star primary playmaker. Like, they're at least one, maybe two steps ahead of where Cleveland is, even if it doesn't really show in the standings right now. In terms of their long-term build, you know, they've got their main guy, and Cleveland is still sort of looking for their main guy, and maybe they can find him in the top of the draft this year. Maybe it's the top of the draft next year. You know, who knows exactly where that guy comes from for them. But comparing them to Atlanta is a little bit difficult, because Cleveland, they need, I mean, we don't know that the next Cavaliers team that is going to make a conference finals run, we don't know that any of the players on the roster right now are going to be on that team. Whereas in Atlanta, like, they've got a sort of Trae Young is everything. He is the sun around which everything orbits, and then we just got to find the right planets to put around him. And Cleveland doesn't quite have that yet, so that comparison's a little bit difficult for the Cavaliers.
I reason I ask is because I struggle to find like a comparable situation to Cavs. Is maybe Charlotte the closest one, but even they feel like a little different, because the Cavs have guys that I think are better than some of the older vets Charlotte has. But like, obviously Memphis is in it. That Memphis and Atlanta kind of as the other two teams that are young and could have had cap space this summer, but punted on it. Have like guys like Memphis has Jaren Jackson Jr. They have John Morant. Atlanta has Trae Young. They have John Collins. They just got Clint Capella, who I think most people would probably take over Drummond, or at the very least, he's you know, he's had a track record of playing in the playoffs a little bit deeper than Drummond has to this point. I struggle to really find like a comparable situation. It kind of makes it hard for me to evaluate what they're going to do. And I think there's going to be some shakeup. I think there's going to be, you know, a variety of things that are going to be kind of ongoing with this group and things that could change with this group. But I struggle sort of to figure out exactly like what is a team that they can kind of learn from. Like Indiana, I think broadly is the one, because you're looking at a team that has just constantly been solid. Rob Mahoney wrote a really good piece about this at The Ringer not too long ago, about how they've just been good for a very long time, despite, you know, never reaching the pinnacle, but they've just remained solid. The Cavs can learn from that, but I think in terms of how they kind of build forward, I don't know what the right example is. I don't know if either of you have one of a team that the Cavs could learn from and how they kind of go forward from here.
I mean, I know teams they could learn from that they don't want to emulate. Andre Drummond's former team, the Pistons, I feel like is a good sample or example to take a note out of. It's just like, you don't want to rush this process and you don't want to get hasty and grabbing a superstar a la Blake Griffin to try and make this work. But, you know, I think, like Jeff said, they're not in a situation like Atlanta. They're not in a situation like Memphis, where you have Ja Morant in Memphis and Trae Young in Atlanta, where they're the sun, and then you're assembling these planets and just kind of building the galaxy around these stars. But Cleveland just kind of feels like they're swinging and maybe building a nice foundation of complementary pieces. And I can't really think of an example that off the top of my head. If I really gave this some deep thought, I'm sure I could think of something, but I don't know. I just feel like the Cavs just kind of need to at least find a direction first before they actually start going. And like Jeff said, maybe they land a star in this year's draft, maybe they land a star in next year's draft, or for God knows what reason, maybe some young star gets fed up with the situation and wants to come to Cleveland for whatever reason, and they luck out and they swing a trade for that. But I really can't think of an example. Jeff, what about you? Is there anything that comes to mind with where Cleveland's at and who they can kind of compare to and draw inspiration from?
I mean, there are, you know, the Indiana comparison that Chris made makes a little bit of sense. I mean, even those Atlanta teams, you know, from the late 2000s to when they blew it up the most recent time in 2017, that's, you know, that's a 10-year playoff team that won a few series here and there. You know, I think that's a, you know, that's sort of a reasonable, you know, outcome for a team trying to rebuild like this. You know, not every team is going to tear it down and rebuild immediately to championship status. You know, sometimes you climb back up the mountain and the peak is the second round of the playoffs, and then you have to tear it back down and you try again. You know, so it's not necessarily every tear down doesn't result in a championship. And so it's, you know, I think if they are aim, now that they have sort of, now that they've got a few young guys, if they sort of, if their next step is, you know, make the playoffs consistently, try to get to that level, then, you know, I think that makes a little bit of sense. And then you sort of see from there, which, you know, which of these guys grow, which of these guys pop. Maybe Garland pops in his second year, you know, and all of a sudden you've got that star that you can sort of build around. You know, you never really know with the guards until their second or third year, you know, whether, you know, which guy is going to pop. You know, I think, you know, by this time, you know, halfway through his second year, I think we could be, not reasonably sure, but, you know, we sort of have an idea of where Colin Sexton is going to be long term. He's not that level of guard that you're going to build the whole structure around long term. But Garland still could be, you know, that guy. So, you know, I think that's why, you know, having this next year and a half, even just with Drummond, if he opts in, that's why that would be so important, so that they know if Garland is that guy that they want to build around and whether Drummond, you know, fits around that. You know, the one thing that you talked about in terms of finding a star in free agency, finding a star in a trade, you know, using this space, you know, pre-using this space at this deadline to get Andre Drummond, that, you know, sort of takes them out of doing anything this summer. And so if they have the number two overall pick, the number four overall pick, and Jrue Holiday, Bradley Beal becomes available, you know, maybe those guys aren't perfect fits, but maybe they take a flyer on those guys to sort of help, you know, stabilize their team a little bit, and they can use, you know, that pick or future picks to do that. It's not necessarily a path for them that would make a ton of sense just based on, you know, the rest of their team around those guys, but that is something that they took themselves out of by moving for Drummond early.
Yeah, I think that's all about right. Jeff, I'm going to ask you one last question, and then I'll let you kind of plug everything you have going on right now. But yeah, I just want a yes or a no. Is Kevin Love on the Cavs roster at the start of next season?
Yes, because they won't be able to move him. Not because they want him to be there, but because they literally won't be able to.
Give that Nobody future to me. Give that future to me. I just want to, as a tease for what's coming this week, one of the Cavs Oscar categories that I have is Kevin Love melodrama. That is truly just its own category of art this season. Jeff, just give everyone a plug. Thanks again for coming on, but just give everyone a plug of early bird rights and everything else you have going on right now.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at JG Siegel, at Early Bird Rights, if you just want the articles and the updated cap sheets and stuff like that, and you don't really care about what I think. You can find all of that stuff over there. Earlybirdrights.com is your home for every bit of salary cap info you could ever imagine in terms of where teams are, draft picks that they've got coming up, projected cap room, projected room below the tax, which actually is sort of an issue for Cleveland going into next summer, especially if Drummond opts in. They've got like less than $10 million to the tax, so that's going to be a thing for them to deal with this summer. That assumes they have the number one pick. Now we're getting too in the weeds. Anyway, Early Bird Rights is your home for all of that. It's your home for building rotations if you're interested in how teams are going to set up their lineups going forward. You can click on the rotations tool on the site and find a really cool app that we made to build out a team's rotation like you do on NBA 2K if you play that game. You can find all of my articles up there about trades, about whatever else the rest of the season as we get into playoffs. There'll be playoff coverage as we get toward the draft, free agency, and it just sort of rolls on from there. There's another project that's coming out hopefully in the next 2 weeks, but I've been saying that hopefully in the next 2 weeks since last summer. Hopefully it does eventually come out, but we do have something in the works that's going to be really cool and that hopefully will make Early Bird Rights a little bit more valuable to everybody else. But for now, you can just find the salary cap stuff, the articles, the rotation tool, all of that stuff over at earlybirdrights.com.
Yeah, go check all of that out. Get it while you can. Someday a smart NBA team, is going to hire Jeff to do some really good work in their front office. So while we have him, take advantage. I certainly take advantage of asking him to be on this podcast far too often. But Jeff, as always, thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
I guess we'll be back tomorrow. Evan and I will have another show Wednesday. We're going to talk with Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks, kind of talk about these two young teams before those two teams play on Wednesday. So stay tuned for that. Evan, thanks for coming on. Thanks for doing this with me, buddy. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. We joked about it the other day, but this is like, it still feels like this is your podcast and you asked me on, but I'm happy. I'm co-hosting a good buddy. It's been a lot of fun.
No, you carry much. I am just here for the Joker takes and the memes, and you're here to make us a legitimate.
I am putting it. So sorry it didn't win Best Picture.
Yeah, well, we all get what we want a lot of the time, but that's gonna be it for today. Again, back tomorrow. This is the podcast again where we listen, we watch Cavs games, and we don't like Joker. We'll talk to you then. Thank you.